Are you okay? Good. Did you survive the bonfire successfully? The midges did not consume you completely. That was nice. Well, today is another wonderful day in our 2015 Blackton Grange and Baldersdale, right? Baldersdale. Retreat. Hare Krishna. So yesterday was Lord Balaram's day. Today is Krishna's day. That's nice. So this morning we're going to discuss a particular aspect of Krishna consciousness and the understanding of Krishna. And that is that Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but not just the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, from whom all the other different forms of the Lord come. He does not come from them, they come from him. And particularly Lord Vishnu, from whom the different avatars come. But Lord Vishnu also comes from Krishna. Haribol. Very good, yes. We're inspired about that. Krishna, because there is a commonly held misunderstanding amongst many people from Vedic, or you could just say Hindu type backgrounds, that Krishna is one of the Das Avatar. Krishna is one of the 10 main incarnations of Vishnu. If you're from an Indian or Hindu background, you must have heard that. I mean, I would not believe you if you told me that you'd never heard that idea before. You would be definitely lying. So, yes. So it's a very important subject. And it is addressed in very specific terms. Just directly addressed in Srimad Bhagavatam. So let us talk a little bit about that, and maybe a little bit about one or two of Krishna's pastimes. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So very first thing that we'll do is we will read a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 3, which is titled Krishna is the Source of All Incarnations. And we will read verse 28. Ete chamsa kala pumsa krishnas tu bhagavan swayam indrari vyakulam lokam mridiyanti yuge yuge. Translation: all of the above mentioned incarnations are either plenary portions or portions of the plenary portions of the Lord. But Lord Sri Krishna is the original personality of Godhead. All of them appear on planets whenever there's a disturbance created by the atheists. The Lord incarnates to protect the theists. So let's just begin this little session here by just saying a few words about this verse. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutadeya Shimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamiti Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Prasadane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Bhaskarjyade Shikane Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasni Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, 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 Hare Hare. Vajkapa Charubhya Sthakripa Sindhu Vyevacha Paditaram Pavadevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha. Right. So the chapter, as we mentioned, is titled Krishna is the Source of All Incarnations. It is First Canto, Chapter 3. And, you know, there's a lot of subtlety, there's a certain amount of subtlety involved. But if you can kind of tune in, tuning in is very important in Krishna consciousness. In anything, tuning in is very important. So if one can tune in, to what's being discussed here, things start becoming clearer, and a lot clearer, actually. Yeah. So this chapter, well, I should say, the previous chapter ends with a discussion, very brief discussion, but discussion that, will you please tell me about the avatars of Bhagavan. This is the context. This is the question, the request. Please tell me about the avatars of Bhagavan. In other words, there is Bhagavan, and then there are his avatars, those who descend into this material world from him. So right there at the outset, a distinction is being made that there is Bhagavan, who is, you could say, the source, and then there are the avatars who are coming from the source, and as such, they are subordinate to the source, they are dependent upon the source. Yes. So even though in many ways they're equal, That's also quite possible. But then they cannot be absolutely equal, because he is the source of them, and they are not and cannot be and never will be, never have been. They do not have the capacity to be the source of him. But he has that capacity, which they don't have, to be the ultimate source. Right, so then there's, if you read that chapter, third chapter of the first canto, there are many, there's something like 20-something avatars. What to speak of these sort of, the popular idea in Hinduism of the Das Avatar, the 10 avatars of Vishnu. Here we see there's, if I remember correctly, maybe 21 or 22, something like that, avatars. And in the course of the whole discussion, the point is made that actually the avatars of Bhagavan are innumerable. They are more than the waves in the ocean. And as a person, devotees, myself, as a person who comes from a surfing background, I can tell you, there are many waves in the ocean. There's an awfully large number. I mean, it is just totally fantastic. But there are more avatars. But this is just a short list, which is given of some 20-something. Right. So at the end of the list, this verse appears. Eti Chansakala Pumsa Krishna's Tu Bhagavan Swayam. Which means, because the whole discussion begins with the question, tell me, can you tell me about the avatars of Bhagavan? And now here it said that Krishna's to Bhagavan. Krishna is that Bhagavan. Now, you may be aware that the term Bhagavan is used not just for Krishna. It's used for different forms of the Lord. Even sometimes it's used for, like, Narada Muni is occasionally referred to in the Bhagavatam as Bhagavan, and even Hiranyakashipu, of all people, addresses Lord Brahma as Bhagavan. So one might say that Krishna being addressed here as Bhagavan may not necessarily carry so much weight that it establishes him as the original. He may be just one of many Bhagavans who may have avatars. But this verse here refers to Krishna as Bhagavan Swayam. This is like a qualifying term, Bhagavan Swayam. Swayam means basically the very one, the actual one, he himself, in person, that one, this is him, yeah. So Bhagavan Swayam, that Krishna is the actual Bhagavan. This is the context. The very one. When you use the term Bhagavan, this is the one who the term is really for. And not just someone else who may be very impressive, and then you may say, oh yes, sure, he's Bhagavan. So that's one point. That's one point, which is, you know, worthy of noting, and it's worthy to go, it's worthwhile to go through this chapter and just see how things are presented. Indeed, Jiva Goswami, he refers to this particular verse, 1.3.28. He says that it is the Paribhas Sutra of Srimad Bhagavatam. Paribhas Sutra means the one definitive verse within a particular book which establishes what is the book about. What is the subject matter? This is traditionally called, it's a Vedic system really, that when these big books are written, there is a particular verse which just shows clearly in a nutshell what the book's about. Paribhas, P-A-R-I-B-H-A-S-A. It's one word, Paribhas Sutra. And a Paribhas Sutra, Jiva Goswami, in Krishna Sandarbha, he analyzes and makes this point, and he gives an elaboration, what is a Paribhas Sutra? And he says, it is a verse which governs a book. It governs a book. And when you are reading the book, and if you happen to come across something which seems to present a conflicting idea, then you have to bring it back to the Paribhasa Sutra. And then you may have to interpret that verse, which is apparently contradictory. You may have to then find like a secondary meaning. A secondary meaning, which will then bring it in line with the Paribhasa Sutra. I'll give you an example. It's a very good example. There is actually a second, like a sub Paribhasa Sutra, which is Vedanti tat tattva vedas tattvam yaj gyanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavan iti shachate. Do you all know that verse? Yes? Devotees, you should learn a few verses. Learn this one, learn this one, 1-3-28. Learn this one, I think, what is it? 1-2-11, is it? Is it? Huh? 1-3-28. But Vedanti tat tattva. Vedanti tat tat. Yat gyanam advayam. Brahmeti. Paramatmeti. Bhagavaniti satyate. That the absolute truth can be understood on three levels, as Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan. So there are verses in Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a number, which are describing Brahman, which is a feature of the absolute truth. And they say, the absolute truth is formless and all-pervading, and so on and so forth. And if you just take it on face value, you think, right, that's it. That's the absolute truth. We've got it. But it is the Brahman feature of the absolute truth. It's not the whole absolute truth. So like this, a Paribhasa Sutra, in this case, it's sort of like, there's a sub-Paribhasa Sutra also. They help us to understand statements which are otherwise unclear or contradictory or just, you know, difficult to deal with, confusing. And then they can bring your understanding of that particular unusual verse in line with the actual idea of the book. So that's just for starters, but Krishna Stu Bhagavan Swayam, that Krishna is the ultimate, the original, the source of all sources. Sarva Karana Karanam, as Lord Brahma says, the cause of all causes. And that even he is the cause of Vishnu and he's higher than Vishnu. This is specifically discussed in Srimad Bhagavatam. Did you know that? 10th canto, chapter 89, second to last chapter of the 10th canto. How many of you wonderful devotees have read the entire Srimad Bhagavatam? I read it. Congratulations. You would have read this chapter then, 10th canto, chapter 89. It's the second to last chapter of the 10th canto. It is specifically addressing this subject. First of all, it addresses the subject or the question, who is higher, Brahma, Shiva, or Vishnu? That's an important question, isn't it? Particularly for people from Hindu backgrounds, but just for devotees also. And then the second half of that chapter addresses the question of who is higher, Vishnu or Krishna? And of course, we can take a guess who is higher. It is our Krishna. So it's very interesting. It begins, there is a gathering of sages somewhere, and they're trying to establish who is higher. Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, Durga, Ganesh, or Hanuman. What about Hanuman if you're North Indian? Or what about, if you're South Indian, what about Murga? Aha, yes. What about Madhravaram? You may not have heard of these deities. Who's higher? So they discuss and they come to the point that it's either Brahma, Shiva, Vishnu, but they just cannot get it clear. And someone's saying, Vishnu, Stu Bhagavan Swayam. Someone is saying, no, Shiva, Stu Bhagavan Swayam. Brahma, Stu Bhagavan Swayam. Durga, Stu Bhagavan Swayam. And they say, listen, you know, we already decided it's not Durga. So it's either Brahma, Shiva, or Vishnu. But how to decide? They just couldn't decide. So one great, he's sort of a devotee, but he's not really, he's certainly not a pure devotee, but he's a big Vedic sage named Bhrigu Muni, volunteered. Listen, I will analyze, I will investigate, I will even experiment, and I will establish who is higher of either Brahma, Shiva, or Vishnu. And off he went. So this is now the beginning of the 89th chapter of the 10th canto. So off he goes. And first of all, he goes and visits Lord Brahma, who happens, Bhrigu is from the first generation of beings that appeared within this universe directly from Lord Brahma, along with Narada Muni and some others. So Brahma is his father. First of all, he went to see his father, Lord Brahma. But the thing is, he wanted to test him to see, does he have the qualities of the most superior person? What is his nature? Is he beyond the influence of the modes? So Bhrigu Muni had to test his father. So you know what he did? He just walked in and said the Sanskrit equivalent of, "Hi, Dad." I'm not sure how to say that in Sanskrit, but I'm sure there's a way. "How are you doing, old man?" And now, according to Vedic etiquette, you don't do that. We may do it nowadays in Newcastle, Sunderland, or even in London, or even in Mauritius. But according to real Vedic standards, you definitely don't do that when you come to see your father, having not seen him for a while. You know what you do? You go in, you offer your obeisances on the ground to your father. Even, really, the standard is, every morning, when you get up, take a bath, now then you go to see your parents, you offer your full obeisances. This is Vedic etiquette. Yeah. And you know, interesting little story. Some of you may have heard of a devotee, old Prabhupada disciple, who just passed away. Brahmananda Prabhu. You heard of him? Yeah. Very nice devotee. So back in those days, in maybe 66 or 67, say, He had become a devotee, and he was full-time devotee, shaved head, tilak, dhoti, kurta, etc. And his mother, he was in the temple in New York. His mother was living in New York. He had not seen her since he became a devotee. He had had no contact. She had no idea, what is my son doing? So he asked Prabhupada one day, you know, he said, I think I'm thinking of visiting my father. And Prabhupada said, yes, very good. I mean, my mother, very good. And Brahmananda asked, so what should I do when I meet her? How do I present myself? What do I say? What do I do? Prabhupada said, as soon as you see her, offer obeisances. Immediately. Okay, so, knocking on the door. Well, she definitely was there. His mother came to the door, opened the door. There's her son in full robes with very serious tilak. Not, you know, just a little dab on the nose, and but like the real thing. And just freshly shaved, glossy head. And there he is, and wow, if that wasn't enough, he offered his obeisances. And she just couldn't deal with it. She just closed the door and went inside and wouldn't open the door. Okay, that's by the way. But Lord Brahma, Bhrigu Muni, he came in and he was just very informal. No obeisances, no, not even some little pranam, Hare Krishna, but just, hi, how are you doing? And Lord Brahma, he got really, he felt offended. And would you believe, he was about to kill Bhrigu Muni for being so crude and, disrespectful. He was going to kill him, but then his wife, Saraswati, stopped him and said, no, look, he's your son. He's just overexcited. He hasn't seen you for a while, and something like that. But he's your son. He loves you. Don't kill him. So Lord Brahma cooled down and did not kill Bhrigu Muni. But Bhrigu Muni noted the reaction, the response from Lord Brahma. And Bhrigu Muni understood. He is under the influence of the modes of nature. He is not like a great liberated transcendentalist. So then he went to visit Lord Shiva, who of course is also a son of Lord Brahma, and therefore is his brother, Bhrigu Muni's brother. So he walked in. There's Lord Shiva with Parvati. And Lord Shiva saw, my dear brother, how nice, how wonderful. And he jumped up and went running to greet Bhrigu Muni and to embrace him. Bhrigu Muni jumped back. Get away from me. Don't touch me. Don't come near me. Look at you. Look at you. You're horrible. Look at you. You have the ashes of cremated human bodies on your body. Ugh, that's disgusting. And look at you. You've got a cobra around your neck. And you've got scorpions on your neck. This is tamasic. And look at you. You've got a garland of human skulls. keep away from me. And Lord Shiva got really disturbed. And he was going to kill Bhrigu Muni also. So you got to be really careful. If you want to test people, you got to be really careful how you test them. So Lord Shiva was about to kill him on the spot. But Parvati intervened and said, no, no, don't do that. He's your brother. He just got a little carried away. So don't worry. So Lord Shiva cooled down and did not kill Bhrigu Muni. But Bhrigu Muni noted that, you know, this is not like a transcendental reaction, a divine reaction. There's some material influence here. So then he went to see Lord Vishnu, Shira Dakshaya Vishnu, who was reclining on Ananta Shesh. Lakshmi Devi was massaging his lotus feet, and he was in a sort of a trance, not aware of the external situation. His eyes closed, his consciousness withdrawn. And Bhrigu Muni, you know what Bhrigu Muni did? You won't believe it. He walked up to him. He didn't just step on him. He kicked him. He kicked him in the chest. Yeah. Which, of course, brought Lord Vishnu back to external consciousness, you know, very strongly. And he's looking around, what happened? What was that? And then he understood, that was Bhrigu Muni. He kicked me in the chest. And then Lord Vishnu said to Bhrigu Muni, he said, my dear Brahman, please forgive me for getting in your way when you were walking. I really hope you didn't hurt your soft lotus foot on my hard chest. Are you all right? But thank you so much for putting your worshipable lotus foot on my hard chest, because now you have left some dust from your lotus foot on my chest. And now maybe my wife, Lakshmi, will be willing to embrace me. Because now she's not willing to come any closer than my feet. But now the dust from your feet are on my chest. Maybe she will embrace me to get some of that dust. And Bhrigu Muni couldn't believe it. He just couldn't believe it. What a response. What a reaction. And then he understood. Vishnu is just in a different category from even Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma. He is actually transcendental. Completely beyond the modes of nature and just on a transcendental divine level. He's the supreme. And, you know, there's all sorts of analyses of these three incidents. You know, there's a lot of detail. But one little detail I could mention is that when he met his father, Lord Brahma, the first incident, the offense was mental. It was mental. He was disrespectful. Mentally. He didn't offer obeisances. It was a mental offense. When he met Lord Shiva, it was a verbal offense. He told him, get out, get away. You're contaminated. Don't come near me. It was a verbal offense, which is worse than a mental offense. And when he visited Lord Vishnu, it was a, he kicked his chest. It was a physical offense, which is worse than a verbal offense. You follow? So, you know, the offense to Lord Vishnu was much worse than the offense to Shiva, which was also worse than the offense to Brahma. So, yeah, very interesting. Very interesting. And to this day, you know, in India you get these gotras, the old family lines, which just go back into prehistoric times. So there's still a Bhrigu line, a Bhrigu family, and they regard themselves as being very high, because Bhrigu was worshipped and respected by Lord Vishnu. They regard themselves as being, in a certain sense, higher than Vishnu. Anyway, that's by the way. So Bhrigu Muni went back and explained all these things to all the sages, and they all agreed, you're right, you're right. Vishnu is higher than either Shiva or Brahma. So this is all then, you can read it in the 89th chapter of the 10th canto. And the whole idea, because in Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna is the focus. And Krishna's position as not just Bhagavan, but Swayam Bhagavan, the very actual, the real Bhagavan, as distinct from others who may also sometimes be addressed as Bhagavan. He is the real one, the actual one, in person. It is him. So that's the subject of Srimad Bhagavatam. So here in the 10th canto, in the second to last chapter, 89, this is now being specifically discussed. So the first thing then was to establish Vishnu as higher than Shiva and Brahma. The next thing is to establish Krishna as higher than Vishnu. And this is, you know, this is a sort of a tricky point, you could say. And the discussion is a lot more subtle, really. In order to establish that Krishna is higher than Vishnu, in that same chapter, having told the story of Bhrigu Muni, then Shukadeva Goswami tells the story of Krishna going with Arjuna. Krishna going with Arjuna to retrieve the sons of the Brahman. Are you familiar with that story? Let me tell you the story. In Dwarka, there was a Brahmin family, young, like a youngish couple, living in Dwarka. And they wanted to have a child, so they did. They had a son. The child died within minutes of being born. Not only did the child die, the child disappeared, vanished, gone into nowhere. So naturally they're very upset, very upset. But then they sort of adjusted, and then they decided, okay, let's have another child. So they did. They had a second child, second son. And again, the son not just died, the son disappeared, vanished. And then a third time, and a fourth time, and a fifth time, if I remember correctly, I think they may have had 10 sons. Anyway, it was a good number. It was a really good number of sons they had. And each time the child disappeared, vanished, gone. And after a few, before the last one, kind of in the middle of the sequence, they tried to understand, how is this happening to us? And the Brahmin, he was really like super intelligent. He understood their karma. And he understood that this is not according to our karma. We do not have the karma which would lead us to this point where we would just lose children just like that. It is something else. It is not our karma. So he decided it must be the fault of the king. Yeah. It's not our fault because it's not in our karma. You know, sometimes someone may punch you in the nose or something, slap you, as we said yesterday, give you a what happened. Or even someone may just verbally abuse you and tell you you're a dirty, rotten so-and-so or something like that. And then, of course, people get all upset. But why has that happened, devotees? It's because previously you did the same thing to someone else. And now you are just getting the reaction, that's all. You insulted someone, now you are being insulted because you insulted someone. So therefore, a devotee understands when something like that happens, you get mistreated in some way or another, a devotee understands it is not really mistreatment. I am just getting what I deserve. It is my fault. I, you know, for example, punched someone in the nose. Now, I got punched in the nose because I punched that first person. In effect, I have punched myself in my nose. In effect, I am responsible. So therefore, there's not only no need to blame the other person, but it's wrong to blame the other person. It's actually wrong. Yeah. So anyway, this Brahmin, he understood, it's not our fault. We are not due to lose any children. It is the king's fault. Because he's not governing properly, our lives are not going properly. It's his fault. So they got very angry with the king, Ugrasena. And not only Ugrasena, they got very angry with like all the Kshatriyas, the whole government system of Dwarka, including Krishna. They became angry with Krishna and saying things like, Krishna, they say he's the Supreme Lord. Oh, what a joke. Him. He can't even protect our child. Come on. So Arjuna heard about this, that what had happened, what was happening to them, and that they were now blaming Krishna and minimizing and criticizing Krishna. And Arjuna is a great devotee. He didn't appreciate that at all. And Arjuna, he went to that Brahmin family and he told them, listen, have another child. I will personally protect the child. I will stand there by the child with my Gandiva bow, and whatever, if any subtle being or whatever comes to take the child, I'll kill them. And I will protect your child. Because I'm a Kshatriya. I'm a real Kshatriya. It's an interesting point that he was kind of in a transcendental way, because he's not a conditioned soul, but he kind of got into the mood that I am the doer. I'm the Kshatriya. I will protect because I'm very powerful. And with my bow and my arrows, I will protect. Because he wanted them to have a child successfully so that they would stop criticizing Krishna. So there was Arjuna, Gandiva bow, arrow, ready for anything. And that couple had their, anyone remember, is it 8th or 10th child? I forget, but it's something like that, a fairly high number. The child was born, and there was a child, and there was Arjuna, just ready to give protection. And you know what happened? The child didn't disappear. Every child had disappeared within a minute or 2 minutes, vanished. This child didn't disappear. Half an hour passed, and Arjuna was thinking, yeah, cool. I'm pretty cool. I got it together, see? Kshatriya. What you people need is a real Kshatriya around. And here I am. Okay. So everyone was pretty happy for about half an hour. And then the child vanished. Wow. And Arjuna had told them, either I will protect your child, or if I cannot, I will personally build a fire and I will sit in the fire and die if I cannot. Now, this is Kshatriya spirit. So child vanished. Arjuna said, well, okay, that's it then. Goodbye. And he started building a fire. He started building a fire right there. But then Krishna heard about it, and Krishna came, and Krishna said, no, 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 don't do that. Don't do that. There's no need. Come with me. We will get those children back. Yes. And settle everything. And then this Brahmin couple, they will really be happy, because they'll get all these several or 10 or however many children back. So Lord Krishna and Arjuna got onto Krishna's chariot, flew through the universe until they arrived in the abode of Mahavishnu. Mahavishnu himself. So they came, and it's a little subtle. In fact, it's so subtle that a lot of people, when they read it, they don't get it at all. But interesting point, when Krishna and Arjuna arrived there in front of Mahavishnu, they offered obeisances to Mahavishnu. And Mahavishnu did not offer obeisances. So, and then Mahavishnu said, oh, how wonderful. I really wanted to see you together. But particularly I wanted to see you, Krishna. I really wanted to see you. And I know why you've come. You've come for the children of that Brahmin couple. Here, take them. And Mahavishnu just handed the children over. And he said, you know, the reason why I personally stole these children was because I wanted to see you, Krishna and Arjuna, but I wanted to see you. Now I've seen you. Mission is completed successfully. Thank you so much. Take the children back. That's it. So, now what you can do, if you read the 10th canto, our BBT 10th canto, our devotees quote, the main thing they quote is a purport of Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's, in which he analyzes the whole situation. But in the Krishna book, at the beginning, if I remember correctly, of chapter 90, the next chapter, Prabhupada kind of paraphrases Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's explanation and of how all of this shows that Krishna is higher than Vishnu. What I'm going to do, devotees, fasten your seatbelts and, stay awake, because it's slightly subtle. But if you listen carefully, you'll get it. And then you'll see, wow, yeah, it actually establishes that Krishna is higher than Mahavishnu. So this is now, I'm just going to read, it's three paragraphs, it looks like, three or four, from the Krishna book, just directly from Srila Prabhupada. So Mahavishnu, I mentioned how he said, yes, I just wanted to see you. That's why I did this. It is understood from the speech of Mahavishnu that he was very eager to see Krishna. It may be said, however, that since Mahavishnu took away the Brahman sons himself, he must certainly have gone to Dwaraka to do so. Therefore, why did he not see Krishna there? Because he went there, and Krishna was there. Why didn't he just drop in and just say Hari Bol and see Krishna? So this is Prabhupada's explanation, which, as we said, is a paraphrasing of Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's. Prabhupada says, a possible answer is, which actually means, this is Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's answer, that unless Krishna gives his permission, he cannot be seen even by Mahavishnu, who's lying in the causal ocean of the spiritual world. Thus, Mahavishnu took away the Brahman sons, one after another, just after their births, so that Krishna would come personally to the causal ocean to retrieve them. And then Mahavishnu would be able to see him there. If that is so, the next question is, why would Mahavishnu come to Dwaraka personally if he were not able to see Krishna? Why did he not send some of his associates to take away the sons of the Brahman? A possible answer is that it is very difficult to put any of the citizens of Dwaraka into trouble in the presence of Krishna. Therefore, because it was not possible for any of Mahavishnu's associates to take away the Brahman's sons, he personally had to come to take them. Another question may also be raised. The Lord is known as Brahmanyadeva, the worshipable deity of the Brahmins. So why was he inclined to put a Brahman into such a terrible condition of lamentation over one son after another until the 10th, it was 10, until the 10th son was taken away? Because we must remember that in the pastime of Bhrigu Muni, Vishnu, Bhrigu Muni is a Brahmin. He's not really a devotee. And Vishnu was so happy. I got the dust of the lotus feet of a Brahmin on my chest. And he respected Bhrigu Muni as a Brahmin, not as a devotee. But here now, Mahavishnu put this Brahmin couple into extreme distress for at least 10 years. They were living in distress. Can you imagine? Can you imagine? 10 children in a row, and they don't just die, they vanish. Wow. It's completely out of this world. But Mahavishnu himself did this personally, putting the Brahmin couple into distress. Why? The answer is that Lord Mahavishnu was so eager to see Krishna that he did not hesitate even to give trouble to a Brahmin. Although giving trouble to a Brahmin is a forbidden act, Lord Vishnu was prepared to do anything in order to see Krishna. He was so eager to see him, and it was so difficult to see Krishna. Yes. After losing each of his sons, the Brahmin would come to the gate of the palace and accuse the king of not being able to give the Brahmins protection and of thus being unfit to sit on the royal throne. It was Mahavishnu's plan that the Brahmin would accuse the Kshatriyas and Krishna, and Krishna would be obliged to come see him to take away the Brahmin's sons. Then he would be able to see Krishna. Are you still awake? Are you there?
Yes.
Are you present?
Yes.
Or have you died?
Stolen by Mahavishnu.
Stolen. Okay. So yeah, he thought that these Brahmins, this Brahmin couple, because Brahmins are so dear to the Lord, they'll become so distressed that on the basis of their distress, Krishna will come, and then I'll see Krishna. And then mission accomplished. But still another question may be raised. If Mahavishnu cannot see Krishna, then how was Krishna obliged to come before him after everything to take back the sons of the Brahmins? The answer is, you know, and the way Prabhupada expresses himself is interesting. First couple of, you know, arguments for establishing the first couple of points, he says, a possible answer is. But now he's just saying, the answer is. These are the answers coming from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. The answer is that Lord Krishna went to see Lord Mahavishnu, not exactly to take back the sons of the Brahmin, but why, devotees?
To give his darshan to Mahavishnu.
No. No.
For Arjuna.
Yes? To save Arjuna, who's his devotee. You know, 10 sons lost. Krishna didn't do a thing. He did nothing. Arjuna was about to kill himself. Then Krishna got into action. Yeah. So, yes, the answer is that Lord Krishna went to see Lord Mahavishnu not exactly to take back the sons of the Brahmin, but only for Arjuna's sake. His friendship with Arjuna was so intimate that when Arjuna prepared himself to die by entering a fire, Krishna wanted to give him complete protection. Arjuna, however, would not desist from entering the fire unless the sons of the Brahmin were brought back. Therefore, Krishna promised him, I shall bring back the Brahmin's sons. Do not try to commit suicide. Lord Krishna were going to see Lord Vishnu only to reclaim the sons of the Brahman, then he would not have waited until the 10th son was taken. But when the 10th son was taken away by Lord Mahavishnu, and when Arjuna was therefore ready to enter the fire, because his promise was going to prove false, that serious situation made Lord Krishna decide to go with Arjuna to see Mahavishnu. Hare Krishna. Therefore, Krishna stu Bhagavan Swaya. Now, I don't know if you got it all, or if some of it sounded too, like, fine detail, and, you know, sometimes some devotees think that these arguments are not necessarily strong enough to just establish, yes, Krishna is superior to Mahavishnu. But this is Srimad Bhagavatam. This is how Srimad Bhagavatam explains and establishes that Krishna is actually the highest, higher even than Vishnu, who oftentimes many people think is actually the ultimate supreme. Quick tone check. And another interesting point, Mahavishnu only got to see Krishna by the mercy of a devotee, by the mercy of Arjuna. If it hadn't been for Arjuna, Mahavishnu, you know, he could have taken 100 sons. He would not have got to see Krishna. It was only when Arjuna entered the scene. So, and it's similarly said about Lord Jagannath, who was Dwarika Krishna, not exactly Vrindavan Krishna, although he remembers Vrindavan, but he's actually a little different. Jagannath, Dwarika Krishna, only got to go to Vrindavan by the mercy of the bridge busing. In the whole Rathyatra pastime. They took him back. Otherwise, he's from Dwarika. He would not have been able to enter Vrindavan without them like interceding. So just see the position of the devotees. In Dwarika, all those devotees were seeing Krishna every day. Mahavishnu could not see Krishna. He was not able to go in and see Krishna. There are a couple of other points. Well, yeah, okay, very briefly I could mention that in the Brahma Vimohana Leela, Brahma steals the cowherd boys and calves. He locked them up, imprisoned them in a cave, Lord Brahma, came back thinking he would see Krishna bewildered. Where have they gone? Oh, it's a disaster. And then he would laugh at Krishna. People say you're a big, important person. Look at you now. But he came back and he saw the cowherd boys and calves. And he thought, wow, what happened? Did they escape so quickly and come back here faster than I came? How could it be? And then he went back again, and they were still locked in the cave. And he came back again to Vrindavan, and there they were again, with Krishna. And then Lord Brahma started realizing, wow, there's something going on here which is beyond me. And then on top of that, you know what happened? All the cowherd boys and calves transformed into Vishnu forms, four-armed Vishnu forms. Yeah. Yes. So So this again, you know, those, they are the cowherd boys and calves. Krishna is there. It's also showing that Krishna is higher than Vishnu, because all those different forms there of the cowherd boys and calves, they're all under Krishna. Then there's in Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's the discussion between Venkata Bhatta and Lord Chaitanya. Venkata Bhatta was from Sri Rangam and was a worshipper of Lakshmi Narayan. And Lord Chaitanya was staying with them for 4 months, the rainy season. And they would debate, who is higher, Lakshmi Narayan or Radha Krishna? And Venkata Bhatta, you know, is staunch Sri Vaishnav, worshipper of Lakshmi Narayan, accepting that Lakshmi Narayan are the highest. And Krishna is a Leela avatar of Narayan, just for pastimes. And Lord Chaitanya said, but look, if Krishna is lower than Narayan, he's just a Leela expansion. Just when Narayan is in a playful mood, he just, you know, he plays around as Krishna, but Narayan is the source. Lord Chaitanya asked, so if that's the case, why did Lakshmi leave Narayan to join the rasa dance? This is in the 10th canto. Lakshmi Devi left Narayan and went to join the rasa dance. And so Lord Chaitanya said, well, how could that be? She left Narayan. If he is higher, how could she leave him? And Venkata Bhatta said, well, there's nothing wrong with that. Krishna is Narayan, an expansion, but in a very playful mood. And the wife likes to associate with her husband in all his different moods. So naturally she wants to associate with her husband when he's in that playful mood. So therefore she went to join the rasa dance. There's nothing wrong with that. But then Lord Chaitanya said, very good, that is nice explanation. But tell me, why is it that Lakshmi Devi was not able to enter the rasa dance? She left Narayan to enter the rasa dance, but she couldn't enter it. And I don't know if you're aware, Lakshmi is still there. She's in Bailvan doing austerities to enter the rasa dance 5,000 years later. She's still there, and there's a temple there, Lakshmi temple. So Venkata Bhatta said, I cannot answer that question. And then Lord Chaitanya explained that she was actually not able to enter the rasa dance because she was not willing to give up her high position as the goddess of fortune. Big, powerful goddess, worshipped with great opulence, very formally. She wasn't willing to give that up and become a little gopi girl in Vrindavan and make cow dung patties and things like this. She was not willing to follow in the footsteps of the Brijbasis. Therefore, she was not allowed and is still not allowed to enter the rasa dance. So Lord Chaitanya explained that to Venkata Bhatta, and Venkata Bhatta then accepted, yes, you're right. Actually, Krishna is higher. Radha Krishna are higher. And Lakshmi Narayana expansions of Radha and Krishna. And you know, interesting little point is that family is still there. The descendants are still there in Sri Rangam. There's still pujaris there. They're pujaris of Lakshmi. Yeah. Venkatabhatta became a Gaudiya Vaishnava, follower of Lord Chaitanya. But then later the family reverted back to being Sri Vaishnavas and worshippers of Lakshmi Narayan. But they're still there. I don't know if any of you have been there and met them, but they're really nice people. And they know all about this, how Lord Chaitanya stayed with their ancestors for 4 months, and they know all about these things. Really, the father is just extremely nice. So there you have it, devotees, Krishna Stu Bhagavan Swayam. But let me tell you one little story. Are you okay to hear another story?
Yes.
Okay. Now this is it's very serious, but it's a little less serious in a sense. One day at Nandagram. How many of you have been to Nandagram? I was there. Okay. So Nandagram, Krishna lived in Nandagram in the later period of his time in Vrindavan. One day, Krishna walked into the kitchen and Mother Yashoda was deep frying, all sorts of snacky prasad and cooking snacky prasad, different samosas. Different pakoras. And she was also making dokra. She was making paturi. She was making what? Cham cham. No, she was making not sweets, but savouries. Pakori. Have you ever had a pakori? If you haven't, you have not lived. And all these different things. And Krishna, normally whatever Mother Yashoda makes, she's making for Krishna. And Krishna thought, this is for me. And he said to Mother Yashoda, Mata, is this for me? And Mother Yashoda became very sort of firm and said, no. This is for your father, Nanda Maharaj. Today is Akshaya Tritiya, she said. It's in May, more or less, usually Akshaya Tritiya. Very auspicious day. Today is Akshaya Tritiya. Your father is going away on a long trip today. This is his prasadam for the road. Yes, so you can't have any. So Krishna was a little upset. My father's going away. He's leaving Vrindavan. Oh, that's not nice. So he asked Nanda Maharaj, Peter, where are you going, Peter? Where are you going? Nanda Maharaj said, I am going. It is Akshaya Tritiya, auspicious day. Today, I am leaving for Prayag, that sacred place, which is a long way out of Vrindavan. And Krishna said, Peter, why are you going to Prayag, Peter? Why are you going? Nanda Maharaj said, listen, every day I perform so many material activities just to maintain my family. And I incur so much karma. So I am going to Prayag, to that sacred place, to take bath in the confluence of the Ganges, Yamuna, and Saraswati. And I will get free from all that karma. and come back refreshed. And Krishna was not happy that Nanda Maharaj was leaving Vrindavan. So then Nanda Maharaj said, all right, look, before we go, come down the hill with me to Pavan Sarova. There's a lake at the bottom of the hill at Nandagram called Pavan Sarova. Pavan means purifier, deliverer. And Sarova means lake. So the lake which purifies, which delivers people from this world. So Nanda Maharaj said, you come with me down the hill. We'll bathe in Pavan Sarova and then I'll leave. So Nanda Maharaj took Krishna with one of his hands. He held Krishna's hand. In the other hand, he had his bag of snacky prasad for the road. And they're going down the hill. Krishna's holding his father's hand. Krishna pulled on his father's hand. Peter, 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 give me one samosa, Peter. Just one samosa. And Nanda Maharaj said, no, I cannot do it. I have a long trip. I need all the prasadam I can get. Otherwise, if I run out on the road, I will have to buy potato chips. And I don't want to do that. So he wouldn't give Krishna even one samosa. So they got down there by Pavan Sarova, and they're just about to dive in when on the other side, they saw this big man, very handsome man, beautifully dressed and decorated with opulent jewelry, and he looked like a demigod. And this man dived in Pavan Sarova. And then he came out roaring with laughter. And he rolled in the dust and dived in Pavan Sarova again. And came out just roaring with laughter. And Krishna said, Peter, Peter, who that man, Peter? Who is he? And Nanda Maharaj said, oh, I don't know. I never saw him before. So they went over. And Nanda Maharaj asked him, my dear sir, please tell us, what is your good name? And that big, handsome, opulent gentleman said, my name is Prayag. Nanda Maharaj was astonished. What do you mean, Prayag? What sort of name is that? And Prayag said, I am the personality of that sacred place where the Ganges, Yamuna, and Saraswati meet. I am the personality of that place. And Nanda Maharaj said, really? Well, what are you doing at Pavan Sarova? What are you doing in Vrindavan? And Prayag said, all year the pilgrims come and bathe in my waters. They leave their karma on me. So once a year on Akshaya Tritiya, I come to Vrindavan and I bathe in Pavan Sarova. And I become free from all that karma. And then I go back refreshed. Nanda Maharaj was just too astonished. He just said, oh, I see. And then Prayag said, look around. Look around. See, there are many of us. You see the lady back there with the sort of yellow-colored sari? See her with the orange bee bag? That is Ganga Devi. And you see the man back there with the shaved head with the scarf around his shoulders. That is Budrick Ashram. And you see the other lady, see with the red. See there? Over there, that's her. She is the river Kaveri. And they looked around and Prayag was just pointing them out one after the other. They were all there, so many of these opulent, big, powerful people bathing in Pavan Sarova, rolling in the dust, roaring with laughter. And Prayag said, we all come here on Akshaya Tritiya. All the personalities of all the sacred places. We all come here on Akshaya Tritiya. We bathe in Pavan Sarova. We become free from all the karma left on us by all the pilgrims. And then we go back feeling refreshed. Nanda Maharaj took Krishna by the hand and said, come with me, Krishna. Krishna said, Peter, you're going to Prayag now, Peter. You're going to leave now, Peter. Nanda Maharaj said, no. Krishna said, what you going to do, Peter? What you going to do now? Nanda Maharaj said, I'm going to bathe in Pavan Sarova. Then I'm going back to Nandagram. Krishna said, Peter, why are you not going to Prayag, Peter? Why are you not going? Nanda Maharaj said, I changed my mind. So they bathed in Pavan Sarova. Then they're walking back up the hill to Nandagram. Nanda Maharaj is holding Krishna by the hand. In his other hand is the bag of prasad for the road. And Krishna pulled on Nanda Maharaj's hand. Peter, 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 give me one samosa, Peter, just one samosa, only one, just one. Only one. Nanda Maharaj looked at this bag of prasad for the road. He just gave it all to Krishna. You take it, I don't need it. So you see, Vrindavan is the topmost sacred place. It's worshipped by all the other sacred places. Krishna is the topmost deity. The process of Krishna consciousness is the topmost process. Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam are the topmost scriptures. Hare Krishna Maha Mantra is the topmost mantra, sound vibration. Everything about Krishna consciousness is the best. So you see, Krishna Stu Bhagavan Swayam. Shri Vrindavan Dham Ki
Jai.
Shri Shri Radha Krishna Ki
Jai.
Shri Giri Govardhan Ki
Jai.
Srila Prabhupada Ki
Jai.
Gaur Premanande. Jai.